Now, to talk about numeric squareals, I think this is more or less the third talk about squareals in the conference plus workshop series. So please check out the other two talks. Maybe there have been more, but these are the two that I'm aware of. So I'll give like kind of a, so I assume that you don't know anything about squareals, so you've not seen these two talks. So I'll give like a very basic introduction, only at the very end tell a little bit about my own work. And if I do so, you can find the details in here. Now I should start with a few jokes, because like this person here, Yaroslav, but in like 2011 he told me, your jokes are getting better, I think at some point in life. And then in Ohio he told me, it's a waste if you don't spend at least 30% of your talks on jokes. So I think this is just an insult towards my scientific capabilities. So I actually started with something very serious, just to... I told you, some of you, about it in private, so I think also the last speaker, well, you referred to the Boltzmann equation as being like meeting resistance in this community. So I think it's, and several of you, Iro, and also Daniel, I think you, like the Kuba formula is always presented as the ultimate truth. And so just before I left to, I left for Santa Barbara, this guy, Nico von Kampe, he died at age 92. He's two generations before me, I think, one generation before Gerrit, more or less. I don't know if you know him, but so he showed up at the colloquia in Utrecht until a few months ago. Always fun to talk to over lunch and so on, but he was actually against the Kubo formula. So, and I went to his funeral, and then somebody, which was not a very sad occasion actually, because he grew so old and so healthy, until the very end, basically. He stayed healthy until the till the very end. But then Mathieu Ernst, who was also a professor in Utrecht, also retired, he said that with Nico the final resistance against the Kubo formula has died, which I find like a very nice... It's not probably a literal quote because I had to translate from Dutch. But so just keep in mind that there have been people who are even against the Kubo formula. So not only against the Boltzmann equation, but also against the Kubo formula. What exactly the arguments are, I don't know. So now I'm going to make a few jokes anyway, just by putting in some pictures. I think this picture is just funny out of itself. But you can clearly see, like, Gerrit is always, this is taken at the hike last weekend. So Gerrit is always in good mood. Yaroslav was kind of mood, was like over the, well, Bert is like kind of an ex-professional sportsman anyway, so I think, like, for us this was tough, but for him this was a tiny perturbation.
Sorry, Grandpa, to disturb you, but there seems to be an issue with your...
Yeah.
Oh, you have the mic.
Yeah. Should I switch it on, maybe?
Yeah, I think it's not on.
Okay, well, this first part was kind of PG-13 anyway.
Oh, wait. You should be fine, actually.
Yeah? Alright, so this is on the top. This is kind of an experiment theory collaboration in doing some hamburger eating. I think I was actually the winner of this contest, as far as there was a contest. Okay, so I'm going to talk like very slowly about magnetic skirmions, so introducing what they are and talk a little bit about topology and energetics. And so most of you may know this, but I just wanted to be complete. So I made this talk basically for somebody who doesn't know anything about magnetic skirmions. And I'll say a little bit about skirmion lattices that have been discovered 4 years ago by now, I think, about the current-driven motion, how they interact with current, and about single skirmions in nanowires, something that hasn't been observed yet, at least not the type of skirmions I'll talk about, and their interaction with current. And then I'll go from weak to strong spin orbit coupling, at the very end, if I have time. And I don't really care if I don't make it through the entire talk. And then somehow, to give you some motivation up front, at least my motivation for looking at this is to... is because I think, and I maybe convince you of this, maybe not, that these skirmions, they have some nice features that make them attractive, at least from a theoretical point of view, to study the interaction between current and, let's say, spin current and magnetic textures, specifically for skirmions. So here are two examples of skirmions. So whenever I say skirmion, I should actually say baby skirmion. So these skirmions are somewhat are non-singular. The skirmions you encounter magnetism are non-singular, so there's no singularity at the core or so. Whereas the skirmions that were originally introduced by in particle physics are actually singular objects, so that they're kind of different, actually. So these are, strictly speaking, I think what people refer to as baby skirmions. I don't know why the name baby, but at least they're non-singular. So a skirmion is an excitation in the, let's say, homogeneous single-domain ground state of a ferromagnet, or it's not a ground state in this case, but from a single-domain state, a tiny part of the single domain is pointing in the other direction. So let's say here, everything is pointing up out all the way in infinity, and then at some tiny region at the skirmion core, the magnetization is pointing down. Same here, and the only difference between these two is kind of the turning sense as you go from center to edge, say. So here, it's kind of like what people in magnetism call an EL-type structure, at least if you would draw a line here and follow this spin radially outward, you think you are dealing with a EL wall, whereas here this is kind of a Bloch wall where the turning is sort of perpendicular to the radial direction. And so I refer to these as hedgehog-like skirmions and vortex-like skirmions. These are topological excitations only if there's somehow a well-defined chirality. For example, as you cross here radially, the spins always tumble in the same way in this entire, let's say, radial direction, and the same here. And so it's a topological excitation in that case, and it's characterized by a certain winding number. So this omega here is a unit vector in the direction of magnetization, and this winding number basically counts how many times such a magnetic texture wraps around the unit sphere, basically. So this W here is an integer. It's either plus or minus one for these configurations, I don't know. So just to make a distinction between skirmions and bubbles, so whenever I talk about skirmion, I mean an object really which has a winding number that is not zero. And I think, strictly speaking, of course, in practice, probably most bubbles have a winding number that's not equal to zero either. But strictly speaking, bubbles, there's a sort of this history in magnetism has to do with magnetic bubbles, which are also domains of opposite orientation in a, let's say, a plane of certain uniform magnetization. And these bubbles don't, strictly speaking, have to be topological in the sense that their winding number could be, depending on some strange configuration, could be zero. I found it hard to draw like a two-dimensional picture of that, but here you find like kind of a one-dimensional example of two. So this doesn't strictly have anything to do with skirmions, but here you find two configurations that are, whereas the top one is topological and this one is actually not topological. So if you look at this texture here, so the word topological means that you cannot undo this excitation, so this domain which is pointing up in the sea of downspins, you cannot undo this by local surgery, as people like to call it, meaning that the equation of motion cannot undo the winding of this domain here. And the way to understand is that if I go from left to right, then basically the spins, they travel around the unit circle once. So this domain structure, let's say provided the spins are allowed only to live in one plane, but this has one winding. Actually, if you rotate this structure, you get a skirmion. However, this one, you can actually undo this domain by just basically rotating all these spins, counterclockwise here, one by one, and then you can actually completely remove this domain. And you can understand that this doesn't have any winding, because if I go from left to right here, I basically go along the unit circle and go back in the same way. So I can contract basically that thing to a single point, and so it doesn't really have a winding number, this section. Okay? And so similarly for the skirmions, which are kind of like the 2D generalizations of these windings, you can have, in principle, you could have bubble domains, so a single domain pointing in one direction, everything else is pointing down, or vice versa, that don't have really this winding number that is not to be different from zero, so that are not topological. So I think when people talk about bubbles, they, strictly speaking, are not talking about topological objects, although in practice they likely have a winding number. So the skirmials I'll talk about, so for skirmials you need a well-defined chirality, so they have to be topological, meaning that the turning sense, so in this particular example, the turning sense of the arrows has to be the same as they go through the texture. So in this way, here always the arrows tumble as they go from left to right, the arrows, the magnetization tumbles clockwise. And this sense of rotation has to be set by something, and in the skirmials I'll talk about, this sense of rotation is set by chiral interactions, which are called Jizovczynski-Murie interactions. And we've heard, well, for those of you who've been around, which I guess is all of you, you've heard many talks already about Jizovczynski-Murie interaction, this week by Stewart, Parkin. And so for two atoms, so Jizovczynski-Murie interaction is our interactions between magnetic moments that arise whenever you have spin orbit coupling, you break a spatial inversion symmetry. But the simplest example is two atoms, two magnetic atoms with classical spins on top. Again, characterized by unit vectors omega 1, omega 2. Now you can actually derive that there's an, apart from the exchange interaction, there's another interaction between these, magnetic interaction between these two atoms, which is sort of given by the cross product dotted into a vector called the Jizovczynski-Murie vector, and this vector is actually the cross product of the position of this magnetic atom with respect to a non-magnetic atom with strong spin orbit coupling. Okay, so if this atom would be right at the center, you won't be breaking any inversion symmetry, and then this Jizovczynski-Murie interaction vanishes. So it has to be placed off center, basically. So you need to break some inversion symmetry, and you need to have strong spin orbit coupling. I must say, as an intermezzo, that Jaroslav yesterday evening in the bar promised not to ask any questions. He's retiring from asking questions, and he's going to type away at his laptop. So I think up till now you're behaving as you promised. I'm impressed. I tried to make my talk more provocative at some point. So this is kind of the two-atom version of the Jizovczynski-Murie interaction. Now, of course, in a solid state there are many atoms. And you can actually kind of classify the Jizovczynski-Murie interaction by symmetry. And so one of the simplest version of the Jizovczynski-Murie interaction. Go ahead.
Small question, so why it's not only the Jizovczynski-Murie, you also have another term. Like second rank tensor, right? And then first is exchange, and then this, and you have another, yeah, sure, sure. So there's a dot, yeah, in principle there's many, of course, yeah, even for a general spin orbit, right? Yeah, yeah, for a general spin orbit, yeah, yeah, sure, but sure. You can just throw that away, well, I mean this smallness associated.
I wouldn't know exactly what the small parameter is here, but sure there are more interactions. I'm just focusing on this one now.
Yeah.
You have I'm only showing these Jizovczynski-Murie interactions, so there would be like a dot product interaction, and in principle that can have tensorial properties, right? Yeah, that's what you're. Yeah, okay, sure. Okay. So when you're dealing with many atoms, you go to a continuum description, and then basically you add the Jizovczynski-Murie interaction as an energy, as a term in the energy for the magnetization, which kind of is allowed to have a gradient, a single gradient in there, and a single gradient, so this one here, is basically allowed because you break the inversion symmetry. So in systems with inversion symmetry, you can only have, let's say, squared of gradients, basically. Even powers of gradients, but if you break inversion symmetry, you can have a single gradient. And there are many possible terms of this form. So in principle, now this D could be a full tensor, third rank tensor, with some special properties. I don't want to go into details here. But the simplest form, sort of that keeps rotational symmetry, is this type of Jizovczynski-Murie interaction. And so now the full energy for the magnetic system is the exchange, which favors alignment. Then this is Jizovczynski-Murie interaction, which favors gradients, basically. And then let's say I add an external field, and in principle it could be a dipolar field. Now, so this is the, to lowest order, basically, the energy, sorry, the magnetic energy that is appropriate for manganese silicide. So this material where these skirmial lattices have been seen. Now, just by looking at the various the magnitude of terms, what you can now deduce is that, so in principle, this exchange interaction would like the magnetization to be homogeneous. But the energy can always be lowered by making basically a gradient, if I ignore the overall magnetic field for a moment. And so the size of, let's say, the size of the spatial, the size of the gradient is the size of any spatial texture is set by the balance between exchange and Giesel-Lezinski-Maria interaction. Now, if you plug this back into this equation, you find that it actually costs a certain amount of energy. Hi. welcome. You missed all the jokes. what was I saying? Okay, so this is the size. So the gradient will basically go as Giesel-Lezinski-Maria interaction over exchange. And so this term, these terms will basically give a contribution to the energy, which is exchange times Giesel-Lezinski-Maria interaction squared. So this is basically the energy cost of making these spatial gradients. And now the energetics of this system work as a function of field works as follows. So if I don't have any external field, then the system can always gain energy by, let's say, making a spiral magnetization, which basically has this spiral as a wavelength proportional to this ratio here. So the gradient is inverse of this ratio. Now these spirals, so if I then switch on a magnetic field, these spirals cannot really accommodate, gain much Zeeman energy. They can become a little bit conical. But the skirmions are much better in sort of gaining Zeeman energy. And so this means that once the energy cost of creating a gradient is comparable to an externally applied field, you spontaneously get skirmions. But then if the magnetic field is big again, then the system wants to be, let's say, a single domain, and skirmions disappear again. So there are basically two critical fields, one for creating a skirmion lattice, or spontaneously creating skirmions, which then turn out to become a lattice. And then at a higher field, the skirmions disappear again. So this was basically first proposed by these people, essentially drawing analogies between these magnetic systems and type 2 superconductors, where there are also two critical fields for, creating vortices and destroying the superconductor. Now, just for future reference, so this fact that the size of the skirmion is given by this ratio, and the fact that the gradient is given is like first order in the Giesel-Lezinski-Maria interaction, the gradient of magnetic texture, also means that the gradient is one power, of spin orbit coupling. So later on, I'll do some power counting in terms of spin orbit coupling. So this Giesel-Lezinski-Maria interaction arises because of spin orbit coupling. So it's first order in the spin orbit coupling. So also the gradient is first order in spin orbit coupling. So these two terms are actually second order in spin orbit coupling, because each gradient comes with one power of spin orbit coupling when I talk about skirmion lattices. And this power counting makes it possible to do some, classification of various phenomenological terms by their order in spin orbit coupling. Okay, here you see, so this is an example of an experiment. This is actually the first discovery of these skirmion lattices in MNSI. So here you see magnetic field versus temperature phase diagram. So at zero temperature, low magnetic field has this helical phase, and it becomes conical. So helical means I have spirals. Conical means I have spirals which sort of have a magnetization component in the direction of the field. And then in this phase, it turns out that, so this was a phase that people didn't understand. So everything you don't understand, you call anomalous, I guess. So this is the anomalous phase. And here are these two critical fields, because this actually later turned out to be the skirmion lattice phase. And this was discovered in the group of Christian Fleider by Newton's scattering experiment. So these six spots basically mean that you have a magnetic structure which has sort of a hexagonal lattice structure, and which is now understood as being the skirmion lattice. So in this cartoon is of course a cartoon in the sense that it doesn't really look like this, like a skirmion lattice on the surface. So you should think about it as being translation invariant in the z direction or along the field direction, basically. So the skirmions are really skirmion lines here. So here you see basically hexagonal lattice of all these skirmions. And what's kind of important is that it's very clear that they have a well-defined handedness, a well-defined chirality. So each skirmion has basically, in this case, it has a right-hand rule, I guess, about the before the skirmion course, they go like clockwise and the center is pointing down. It kind of obeys a right-hand rule. But this is kind of dependent on the sign of the interaction. These are the Zinsky-Mori interactions.
How big are they in the real space?
So in MNSI, they will be around 20 nanometers. So let's say, roughly speaking, 10 nanometers. So this is also the size of, let's say the spirals. So the wavelength of the spirals is the same. It's also 20 nanometers. You can actually think about these guys as being a superposition of spirals with different wave vectors. Yeah. That's a good question. I should have pointed this out. So it's think about the order of nanometers for everything I'm going to say. So, yeah. But just to sum up, kind of again, this difference in names. So the skirmions I talk about, like topologically, they have this integer winding number, and they are stabilized by exchange versus the Zinsky-Morian. Whereas these bubbles, okay, they don't have to be topological in practice, they probably are, but they are sort of stabilized by exchange versus surface trade fields. So they don't have anything to do with the Zinsky-Morian interaction, and they are typically much bigger. There are also magnetic vortices, which are kind of, which let's say look like, where the magnetization looks like this. And they occur when you have like, say, a circular nanodisc of magnetic material, of soft magnetic material, then the dipolar field wants to make a magnetic vortex where the sort of magnetization lies in the plane. And then actually this winding number is half integer. And so if you're fancy, you call that a Meron. And so that's basically what a magnetic vortex is, and that's actually stabilized by exchange versus dipole interaction. Okay? I think this is kind of, these are the differences, at least in my mind, the differences between all these magnetic objects. So I think a lot of, let's say, people who find the word skirmions fancy, they think that they're really the same as bubbles and magnetic vortices, but there are some subtle differences, I think. Or not.
In its lattices, is this winding number always well defined?
Yeah, so good question. So what you define there is a winding number per unit cell, say. Now, in a finite geometry, the winding number is not really, doesn't have to be integer, because at the edges there can be some deviation. It doesn't have to be exactly pointing, let's say, up.
But it's not the case if you have a lattice inside of the lattice.
Right, so inside the lattice you can per unit cell define the winding number which is exactly an integer. Thanks.
Sorry, I think that, yeah, the next one. It's useful to say that, but I mean, the arrow doesn't work in both ways. If you just have exchange in direction from area without a field, you wouldn't have skirmions. You'd have
you could in principle make them, you could make metastable skirmions. So in principle, you could, I'll say a little bit about that later, but in principle, if you have a homogeneous configuration and you just have exchange in Zinsky-Morian, if you crank up the Zinsky-Morian and you, let's say, you can make a skirmion with a, by injecting spin current, and once you've made it, it will be metastable. So it's not a ground state, but it will live there forever for topological reasons, basically.
But there's no, I mean, in equilibrium, I don't think there's any known example we'd have skirmions in zero field.
Not experimentally that I know of. I mean, I don't think having the field is so crucial. You could do this with exchange biasing, for example. It doesn't have to be an external field. But at least experimentally, I think all the examples of ground state skirmion configurations are indeed tuned by field. That's true. But I think, yeah. But it doesn't have to be, these comments do not necessarily have to be about ground state configurations.
Sure. No, I think for distinguishing that, it makes sense that it shouldn't take it too much.
No. But I just wanted to clarify these things because somehow in discussions I've noticed that people are always asking about these things. So that's why I wanted to mention it here. Okay, so what about the interaction with currents? Now let's first assume weak intrinsic spin orbit coupling. Now this is more or less a wrong assumption, but since Jaroslav is not asking any questions anymore, I can just safely make it. And I do this only for kind of like, I don't want to do everything right away. So let's first assume that that intrinsic spin orbit coupling is weak such that I can ignore it in the current magnetization interaction. Now this has to be a wrong assumption in the sense that these skirmions are in the first place stabilized by the basically spin orbit interaction. So something is inconsistent here, which I'm aware of. So you can go on typing. Good. But this is just for a kind of simplicity for the moment. Later I'll come back to intrinsic spin-orbit coupling. Now, if you have no intrinsic spin-orbit coupling, so then the terms you can write down in the equation of motion, the Landelicius-Gilbert equation of motion, that arise from the current, are basically, there are only two possible terms you can write down to lowest order in the current, which we're going to do because we're going to do linear response, and to lowest order in the gradient, which we're going to do because these are kind of the first terms that break, let's say, an inversion symmetry, so they will give rise to motion of the texture. So these are the only two terms you can write down, and the reason why these are the only possibilities is that when you have weak spin-orbit coupling, or basically no spin-orbit coupling, then, let's say, spatial vectors and magnetization spin vectors, they cannot really mix. So you have to make separate invariant combination of spatial vectors, so the current and the gradient, and a magnetization vectors, which in this case is the magnetization direction, and that only gives you these possibilities. And so these are the only two current-induced torques or spin-transfer torques that are allowed in systems without intrinsic spin-orbit coupling. And this coefficient A and A prime, for the rest of my talk, are kind of phenomenological coefficients. So in a lot of the spin transfer or current induced torques business, people will write this one in terms of a spin polarization of the current, and you can write this coefficient in terms of this dimensionless beta parameter. But let's just for now not worry about the microscopic expressions and just assume that that these parameters are given and determined from some experiment. Then using Onsager symmetry, you can show that, okay, if the current influences the magnetization dynamics in this way, then magnetization dynamics give rise to current in this way. And this has been discussed by many, many people, and I'm very likely offending now various of you by not showing your name here. But okay, you can afterwards be angry at me. So this is kind of like one-to-one. I would say this is the complete phenomenology of current magnetization interaction where you don't have spin orbit coupling. By the way, this is actually not restricted to magnetic metals. I just want to advertise a hobby of mine. So I also work in cold atoms. And it turns out that also there you can have current skirmion interaction. So we proposed something quite recently. So the interaction between current, between, in this case, not electrical current, but mass current and skirmion textures. And it was actually observed a few months later. So you can look at the interaction between textures and cold atom currents by looking at collective modes of these systems. Okay, I'm not going to go into much detail, but anyway. So here's this, this is the complete phenomenology. So let's focus on this term here. So what this term basically does is, so if you switch on the current, then what this term tells you is that the magnetization texture basically starts drifting with a velocity proportional to, basically with a velocity A times J. So this is kind of like, take it to the left, it becomes like a co-moving derivative. So this term tells you that the magnetization texture, once I switch on a current, will start drifting with a certain velocity proportional to the current, as is also seen for domain walls. And we wanted to see this for skirmions. So, and what we found is kind of surprising. Well, with we, I mean Christian Fleider and his group. So what it is the following. So here's again this Newton diffraction six-fold rotational pattern or a diffraction pattern. And then as you apply a current and no temperature gradient, nothing happens, basically. So this is no temperature gradient and some current, and then this Newton diffraction pattern doesn't change. However, if you apply a current and a temperature gradient, you find a rotation of this pattern with which is kind of odd in current and odd in temperature gradient. So from here to here, you see that the diffraction pattern has turned a little bit to the left. Here it's turned a little bit to the right. And then the way it turns depends on temperature gradient. Just ignore these pictures. So what this experiment shows, at least the interpretation, is that there's a function of current and temperature gradient, the skirmishing ladder starts rotating. And the interpretation was that, so what the temperature gradient does, it changes the polarization of the current, essentially. And so what the effect of the current on the skirmishing ladder as a whole, if I have a temperature gradient, it will exert torques that are not the same everywhere. So it actually can give a overall torque on the entire lattice. It could still also be drifting, but that you cannot see from these experiments. So that's kind of the interpretation of this experiment. Now, if you look at the critical currents for setting on this rotation, they are kind of ridiculously small in comparison to anything that's known from current-driven magnetization dynamics of let's say, domain walls. So they are like 5 orders of magnitude smaller, I think. Now, so this does not prove that the skirmishing, well, the reason for these critical currents to be so small is now believed to have to do with weak pinning of the skirmishing ladders and with very efficient coupling, because you basically have magnetization gradients everywhere, and the current couples to wherever you have a magnetization gradient. And that's why this is very efficient, and couples very efficiently. Now, so this experiment does not prove that the skirmishing ladders is actually also sliding with the current, which it might do as well. And what Christian Fleider did next was look at the topological hole signal. So, how much time do I actually have, Gerrit?
Say 20-25 minutes.
Oh, okay. Okay. I have the feeling I have to speed up, but maybe I can just say easy. So how does the topological Hall effect work? So here's again the equation for the current that is generated by dynamics of the magnetic texture. Now, if I, so let's say the skirmishing lattice is drifting, so it's moving at a certain linear velocity v skirmion, then basically this ddt becomes nothing else but the v skirmion dot gradient, basically. So if I replace ddt with v skirmion dot gradient, I get the current as a result of a drifting skirmion lattice. Okay? Now, if the system would be Galilean invariant, then nothing would happen if the skirmion drift velocity and the drift velocity of the electrons would be the same. I'm not saying now that the system is Galilean invariant, but this is kind of a neat way to estimate certain facts. So I might as well replace this ddt not only with the skirmishing velocity, but subtract the drift velocity from it. Because if they're equal, there should be no effect. Now, if I plug this in here, ignore this term, basically, and I get an expression for the current as a result of the magnetization texture, which is proportion to the skirmishing velocity and the drift velocity. Now, let's say the skirmion is not, let's say the skirmions are static, they're not drifting. But there is an applied current, then this equation tells me, so if this guy is zero, this equation tells me that there's actually a transverse current because of this cross product to the longitudinal current. So this longitudinal current is this drift velocity here, and there's a transverse current in the response. And this transverse current is actually proportional to the skirmion winding number. And so let's say you could interpret this as a Hall resistivity, which is proportional to the winding number. And that's why people call it the topological Hall effect. Now, if the skirmishing ladders then start sliding, this factor here becomes small because the skirmishing wants to make its velocity equal to the drift velocity of the electron, and so this topological Hall signal then drops basically. So another way to say it for people of you who like talk about spin motor force is that as soon as the skirmishing ladders start sliding, it will give rise to spin motor forces which sort of try to counteract the applied electric field, and that gives a drop in this topological Hall signal. Okay, so if the drift velocity is exactly equal to the skirmishing velocity, the topological Hall signal is gone. Now this is not exactly true, but this is approximately true. So these two will never be precisely equal.
What does this to do with the alpha equals beta in the?
Yeah, this would be exactly true if alpha would be equals to beta. Exactly. Yeah. I don't want to go into detail about alpha and beta, but.
And since it's topological, it's not at all sensitive to impurities.
Well, it is sensitive to impurities because somehow,
So this is kind of like a single band approximation, because I assume that there's only one band that gives rise to only one drift velocity. So in real life, you have to worry about how the different bands scatter, and I think actually you also have to worry a little bit, not a little bit, we also have to worry about spin orbit coupling effects that are not taken into account here somehow. But somehow the idea is that, so this topological Hall effect gives rise to an effective magnetic field, which I can basically plug into a Boltzmann equation and then treat this order in the usual way I would do for the normal Hall effect, and there also the disorder cancels. So in that sense, it's insensitive to disorder. But again, this is only true, I think, if you have like a single band, if you make a single band approximation. Right. Okay, this is kind of a nice picture about this. So basically, what you should have in mind is that the current so the electrons that carry the current, they adiabatically follow the skirmion texture, and this gives rise to geometric forces, Berry phase forces, Berry fields, if you will. And they kind of disappear once the drift velocity and the skirmion magnetic texture velocity are more or less the same.
An artist's picture or a real simulation?
That I don't know. I think it's an artist's picture because somehow I don't know how you would get this nice orbital. If you like single, well, I think if you simulate, like solve the Newton equation for a single electron, I wouldn't know. It probably wouldn't look too different from this if you really solve a single classical particle with spin. But I think what you would see, if this would be a classical spin, like you would see very, very fast precession, basically, which is kind of averaged out, and this fast precession gives rise to these geometric forces. So this cannot be the real truth.
Yeah, also here the skirmion method is moving, right?
It's already moving, yeah, so.
So this is probably not directly correlated to the electron. Right?
Yeah, so I didn't make this animation. Now from this, so to resume, so the idea is, so once you have a topological Hall signal due to the presence of skirmions, and this signal basically drops once the skirmions start sliding, and from this you can now, so this is kind of a drop of the topological Hall signal in some units as a function of current, and then you can extract a critical current for the skirmion lattice motion, which is kind of the same as the critical current found in this rotation experiment. Okay, now I want to talk about so this is all like multiple skirmions, skirmion lattices. I want to talk a little bit about single skirmions now. So the motion of single skirmions, so let's say now we're going to look at single skirmions in a nanostrip, say. So let's say the similar setup as what you would do in for domain walls. And now there's a kind of neat thing, which is that if I have a skirmion in a nanostrip, a single skirmion, so this is could be a metastable single skirmion that I've somehow managed to create in this system. So this skirmion, as I said, has a certain handedness. In this case, it kind of follows like a left-hand rule. So the spins at the core are pointing down, and the spins swirl around the core like this. So that's set by the Diels-Lewinsky-Marie interaction, this chirality, this handedness. But the entire magnetic structure also has to kind of follow this handedness. So since the rest of the magnetization is pointing up, the spins at the edge of the nanostructure have to swirl a little bit in the, in this case, clockwise direction. Okay. So this is exaggerated. I mean, it's not that the spins at the edge really lie flat, but they tilt a little bit of the, positive Z direction because of the Diels-Lewinsky-Marie interaction. So for this structure, to come back to a question by Gerrits, for this entire structure, this skirmion number will not be integer, just because of this swirling at the edge of the spins. Now, as a consequence of this left-hand rule, say, so the spins around the skirmion, they swirl in a different direction than the spins at the edge of the nanostructure. So here they go, let's say, counterclockwise, whereas these go clockwise. So when the skirmion approaches the edge of the nanostructure, it feels because of the exchange repulsive force from the edge, as pointed out by these people. And this repulsive force wants to keep it away from the edge. So the skirmions always feels a repulsive force from the edge of the nanostructure. So what now happens if you drive it the current in this direction? So this current gives rise to two effects. One is this, let's say one is a Magnus force related to what what some people call the adiabatic spin transfer torque. That wants to push it to the edge. And one is a drag force related to dissipative effects, the beta term as specialists call it. And so this Magnus force is always exactly cancelled by the repulsive force from the edge as long as the current is not too big. And that leaves then this drag force along the wire as the main propelling force on the skirmion. So the skirmion wants to move to the edge, but it just gets stuck at some distance from the edge and then moves along the current. And it's actually quite nice because this drag force is actually balanced by friction force. And the friction is quite small in these systems, so the velocity goes like 1 over the damping, the Gilbert damping constant, and so the velocity is quite big, actually, because of this cancellation effect.
So it has then skipping orbits, or how does it
do? No, it doesn't have skipping orbits, I think. So
elasticity.
It would have skipping orbits if it would have a mass. So it can sometimes have a mass.
But
this is all this overdamped motion. So I think Oleg talked about the mass of skirmion. So if those effects become important, indeed you would have some skipping orbits. Yeah.
Has this been observed?
No, this is all simulations. So for single skirmions, there is not much work done. But still, it's quite attractive, I would say. This is not too different though from the situation for domain rules, where you also have basically the velocity goes like 1 over. At least when field-like torques dominate, you also have that the velocity goes like 1 over the damping. And so the next question would be, how would you get a single skirmion? So this is a proposal by Nagaosa, if you make a little notch in the side of, let's say, a nanowire, then, well, again, for the reason that the entire magnetic structure has to have a certain handedness, so the spins will swirl a little bit along the edge. Now, this is here is a perfect nucleation center for a skirmion. So if you drive a large current in this direction, you'll actually pull out a skirmion, basically. And that's shown, so this is like increasing current in the, let's say, to the right. And this then pulls out a skirmion. But this is all based on actually adiabatic spin transfer torque physics, I should point out. So this would be a way to nucleate a skirmion. And the nice thing is that it kind of depends on the current direction. So if I reverse the direction of current, you cannot pull out a skirmion here because the chirality is not correct. Okay. Now this is an experiment by Ronald Wiesendanger. I mean, I don't show the experimental pictures because they're very complicated, but what these guys demonstrate is that when you have a skirmion lattice material, then with a spin-polarized STM tip, you can actually delete and nucleate skirmions. So also by injecting locally spin currents, you can actually create single skirmions or annihilate them. Now, this experiment is all low temperature. So just to summarize kind of the status of magnetic skirmion physics, so for these skirmion lattices, there's quite a lot of theory and experiments, I would say, but most of it is very low temperature, and some of it is near room temperature. So I think iron germanium is the material which has a skirmion lattice can be observed just below room temperature, as I recall. But some of the other experiments are at temperatures like around 10, 20, 30 Kelvin. M-I is 30 Kelvin, basically. And so they've seen current-driven motion, electrical detection via this topological Hall effect, and some nucleation and destruction of single skirmions, and then from these lattices within the lattice. And then for single skirmions, there's theory on current-driven motion on this nucleation, as I just showed, but there's nothing been done about electrical detection. So the rest of my talk is going to be about my own work. So what we did basically is we wanted to step away from these skirmion lattice materials but go to materials with large Jelzinski-Maria interaction. And these are the materials that I've now studied in current-driven domain motion. So Stuart had a talk about these perpendicular magnetic anisotropy materials where he sees chiral domain walls due to the Jelzinski-Maria interaction. And the first thing I thought when I heard about those experiments about what about skirmions in these systems. So we're going to look at skirmions in these perpendicular magnetic anisotropy materials, where you have an inversion symmetry because of a layered structure, let's say perpendicular to a plane and along a wire. So these are the PMA materials I'll be focusing on. I'm also going to look a little bit more at how to include now intrinsic spin-orbit coupling in the current skirmion interactions, particularly for these systems. So this gives rise to these so-called spin-orbit torques that we heard a lot about. Now for MNSI, Kettle, Hall, and Arne Bratas, I think Arne will be here next week. I don't know about Kettle, but they kind of did a similar analysis for MNSI. And while doing this analysis, we're going to make use of the fact that every gradient for skirmion texture is proportional to one power spin orbit coupling. So this kind of allows us to classify all terms by powers in spin orbit coupling, and then we're going to just cut it off at power one, basically, at first order. Okay, so just for the energy, so now the Gizelaszynski-Maria interaction is slightly different. So this is now specifically for a magnetic material with inversion symmetry along the Z, inversion asymmetry along the Z direction. And then the Gizelaszynski-Maria interaction, in addition to an exchange and an anisotropy. So this is kind of this perpendicular anisotropy. The Gizelaszynski-Maria interaction is of this form. And this is kind of generic for every system that has inversion asymmetry in a direction perpendicular to the plane. This is the only term linear in gradients and second order in magnetization, which it has to be because it has to be an energy that you can write down. And this is the same as what Kyung Ying and Yu Wu and Mark Stiles talked about last week, but I write it down a little bit differently because this brings about kind of the, let's say, the inversion asymmetry a little bit clearer because it depends explicitly on the Z vector. Now you can ask yourself what kind of skirmions does this energy give rise to. There are two possibilities. The hedgehog one and the vortex type one. So this one is favored by this type of Gizelaszynski-Maria interaction, whereas this one is favored by this MNSI type of Gizelaszynski-Maria interaction, but is also favored by the dipole-dipole interaction. So in principle, there could be a trade-off between. For this type of energy, there could be a trade-off between Gizelaszynski-Maria and dipole-dipole that causes the skirmion still to be vortex-like, but this turns out not to be the case. So if you estimate what the energies are, etc., you find that basically static skirmion solutions are always skirmions of this hedgehog type. This is somewhat important because the internal structure of the skirmion, so whether it's this hedgehog-like or vortex-like, that also depends how it responds to current. So if you apply a current in this direction, this one will, for example, move with it, whereas this one would then respond by transverse motion. So it kind of this internal structure is somewhat important. So if we use the parameters of Jeff Beach, who also studies chiral domain walls in his system, and we find that these are basically the skirmions that are stabilized in the system. Their size is about 10 nanometers. And again, this gradient, one gradient is one power of spin orbit coupling. And this is kind of a profile of the tilt angle with the Z direction as you move outward out of the skirmion. So you go from pi over 2 to 0, basically, in such a way. This is for various different parameters, strength of spin orbit, of strength of the Gizelaszynski-Maria interaction. We're definitely not the first to produce these kind of curves. So this has been done also by other people.
Well, the C1 is actually D.
It's D over something else, which I forget now what it is. It's a dimensionless version of D. Okay, let me just skip this. Okay. So this should be a different spelling. So I have a little bit of time left, right? So I'm gonna, So the crucial thing, which I sort of skipped over, but I'm going to explain it using this equation. The crucial thing is now if you want to, so now we want to be consistent and include basically the skirmion magnetization coupling to first order in the spin orbit interaction. Now, so these were the two terms that are allowed without spin orbit couplings, allowed by symmetry, but because of the appearance of this gradient here, these two terms are actually first order in spin orbit coupling for a skirmion profile. Or skirmion lattice profile. Then in addition, there are two other symmetry allowed terms, which are these spin orbit torques, which are kind of also first order in power counting of spin orbit coupling. which do not require any gradient of the minimization. So this is this anti-damping torque, and this is the field-like torque. So they are both also first-order and spin-orbit coupling. So these four terms here are first-order and spin-orbit coupling, and anything else I write down will be have one power of intrinsic spin-orbit coupling and a gradient, for example. And so this will be then second-order and spin-orbit coupling. And this is where I'm cutting it off. So the entire, let's say, current Skirmium coupling phenomenology to first-order and spin-orbit coupling is captured by these four terms, which are in itself these four terms are not new. But at least for domain walls, you don't know if this is the consistent phenomenology up to a certain order in spin-orbit coupling. So for skirmions, this argument gives at least an idea that this is kind of everything to a certain order in spin-orbit coupling. Now, that does not mean that these are all equally important, so that still depends on experimental details. Okay? So the reason why we're kind of still want to do this is because we want to be a little bit more generic than just applying our theory to these specific PMA materials. Those are the materials we have in mind, but in principle, the phenomenology is kind of generic for every system that breaks inversion symmetry in the z-direction. So it could well be that in some other class of materials, the relative magnitude of these coefficients is different from what is observed now. Now, if you assume that this is the full phenomenology, then you can derive basically the equation of motion for the interaction between current and the skirmion position. So X, capital X here is a skirmion position. This is a Thiele-like equation. So this was derived for magnetic vortices a long, long time ago, before I was born, I think, or just after, I don't know. I didn't do it. So from this equation, you can basically extract the things like the skirmion velocity, depending on these parameters, and these tensors here are basically dimensionless tensors that depend on the internal structure of the skirmion. So it's kind of a little bit complicated, but it's not so complicated, but anyway. Now, if you then estimate for these PMA materials, it's now believed that the only important torque is this anti-damping torque, at least that's, and if we take that as given, then A prime and B are zero, and B prime has the value reported on an experiment. So if you take those estimates, you find that the skirmion speeds are basically comparable to domain wall speed. Okay, so they're around 100 meters per second, depending on Gilbert damping, things like that. So this is just an estimate. That's it. Now we want to look at the inverse effects. Now you can ask yourself, how does the skirmion motion in these systems now, how does it give rise to currents? One thing that we wanted to estimate is precisely how this topological Hall effect, what kind of extra terms might arise because of this intrinsic spin-orbit coupling. And this is then the expression you basically find for the change in the resistivity as a result of skirmion magnetization coupling. So this is not the entire... So there are more terms that describe the influence of the magnetization on the resistivity, like the anomalous Hall effect or AMR, etc. But these are the ones that find their origin in really the current magnetization coupling in the spin transfer torques, basically current induced torque. So there's a topological Hall effect. There's also drag effects that I think were first advertised by Clement Wong and Yaroslav. There's a texture, an additional contribution to the Hall effect, which comes from a combination of spin orbit coupling and having a texture. And this is not topological, this is also there for domain walls, basically. And there's also an additional contribution to, let's say, the planar resistivity, which also comes from the texture and spin orbit coupling. So this is really a Hall effect contribution. But both of these terms are not topological, so they're also there for domain walls. And kind of what they do depends also on the internal structure of the domain walls or of the skirmions. Now it's important to keep in mind that everything here is kind of second order in spin orbit coupling. So all these gradients are first order, and these B's are first order. So this entire expression is second order in spin orbit coupling. Now what I think is kind of a neat, well, maybe not neat, but it's an important observation is that So the topological Hall effect is kind of always advertised as the thing to monitor skirmions. So the experimental observation, it's kind of obvious, but the experimental observation that the adiabatic spin transfer torque is very small in these particular materials, these PDMA material, also means that topological Hall effect is not there. So I think this is maybe from an experimental perspective important. So I think a lot of people think that topological Hall effect and skirmions are intimately related, but in these materials, simply because the polarization is probably very small, the current polarization, because most of the current flows in not in the magnetic layers. So this means that the topological Hall effect is probably small. And that means that actually this is the only term that survives. Okay, let me just, I think I'll wrap up here.
Let's see, when are the cookies time?
10 minutes.
Yeah,
it's okay, right? I think we should be before the. I always.
We have still 10 minutes.
So. Yeah, no, but I can. This is my last slide.
Good.
Yeah. So you're happy with me. I just wanted to stop with a short discussion. So for me, this power counting in spin orbit coupling, I think it could be very powerful. There are some additional features of skirmions that. That are kind of nice. So skirmions give so the combination of real space effects due to the texture and spin orbit coupling effects give rise to kind of more exotic phenomena, such as basically trapping of charge on the skirmion. This was first discussed for MNSI by these people, and this basically, in my opinion, gives kind of extra information on the coupling between magnetization and electrons in the presence of both a real space magnetization texture and spin orbit coupling. That is not present readily for when you have domain walls, say. So that I think is a nice kind of feature of skirmions. So in my mind, skirmions are kind of neat object for studying current magnetization interaction when you both have spin orbit coupling and real space gradient. I think a lot of things could be done there. Kind of a point for discussion, there are some people who really try to advertise skirmions as kind of the new. So we want to build skirmion racetracks, etc., etc. So I don't think that, for example, Stewart believes that skirmions are better than domain walls. He thinks they're simply too big, I think. So domain walls are 2 nanometers or 3 nanometers. Skirmions are 10 nanometers, so they're too big.
Are they fair, think so?
He thinks they're good, so yeah. Shall I repeat that for the audience? Yeah, so I don't have a strong opinion about this. It's also not my main motivation for looking at these objects. But I think you have to just go one by one for these issues, compare domain walls with skirmions. So I think skirmions do have some advantage over electrical detection. Nucleation is probably harder, although, well, maybe it's easier because you only have to locally reverse something, whereas for a domain wall you have to make really one domain, etc. Their speed seems to be comparable. I think they're probably more stable because they're really topological. But I think also their interactions tend to be repulsive, so that's also better than domain walls. So there are some features that are attractive, but I think it's not. Yeah, I think you have to discuss one by one, compare them with domain walls. I don't think there's an obvious case for skirmions, but there's also not an obvious case against skirmions. So these are kind of like discussion points, if you will, or points to think about. And of course, there's no material with room temperature skirmion crystals or single skirmions yet. So I would hope that these PMA materials at some point, by tweaking the Jesus-Inchmere interaction, become strong enough to spontaneously give skirmion crystals. Mm-hmm. So that's about it. Thanks.
Questions, please?
Skirmion latching,
do
you also get some like vibrational modes of this?
Yeah, this has been studied by other people for sure, but you can set up an elasticity theory, for example, where you treat these skirmions point particles and then look at the collective modes of the, let's say, the phonons in the skirmion crystal. Sure. That's one thing to do. Another thing would be to look at the magnetization and really in the spin waves on top of the skirmion crystal. So this has also been done, I think, by some people. I'm not kind of I've not put in all the possible references, all I've touched on all the topics, but
Just one question, I mean, I don't know much about it, but I mean, what is actually known about stability of skirmion? The people, and what bothers me a little bit, is that everything that's known, at least experimentally, is based on skirmion lattices, and as you said, you can also represent most of them as superpositions of a bunch of spin density waves in different directions. But I mean, do we really know that one skirmion is stable? I mean, you can say it's topological that it's stable. I think it's a little bit simplistic.
So I think there are these two papers that I cited, one of Nagaosa, one of Albert Fer et al, who do simulations basically. And they've looked at the situation where you, I don't precise, but somehow you're in a region of phase space where skirmions are not thermodynamically stable, so there's no spontaneous skirmion ground state, but then they look at nucleation and their stability. And they find they're very stable. So once you nucleate one, it's very stable.
But are they just following classical equations of motion? I mean, what are they?
They do Landelijs's Gilbert type equation. But I mean, the questions about topological stability, about their stability, I think that's kind of enough. These equations will be enough for them, in my opinion. Because somehow their stability, I mean, but I don't see a reason why.
I don't know, I mean, it's just sort of gut worry, because I just think if I thought of this as quantum mechanics, I say, well, I have this local object. How do we know it's not just going to spontaneously form a whole lot of spin waves and just disappear?
I mean, it is definitely, yeah, but this would be contained in that. Of course, the quantum mechanics would not be contained in the classical equation of motion of the miniaturization. But I'm sure that at the temperatures we talk about and for the magnitude of the miniaturization, these are all basically materials with classical miniaturization, as far as we know. And I think most of the questions regarding stability can be answered by those equations. Now, there is an issue, I think, where if you're too far away from, let's say, the point where skirmions are thermodynamically stable, then they might somehow, like a single skirmion might just evolve in some texture that is not recognizable as a single skirmion, but still has some winding in a finite space. This can always happen, right? So it doesn't have to be confined as a single object if the Zinsky-Marie interaction is weak.
'70s and '80s, they started these bubble
maps,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Are these also skirmions?
Yeah, okay. As I said, so there's a subtle difference, I think, but I'm probably in those materials.
These are extremely stable, right? Because I think they almost made it, right? These memories.
But they're also huge, right? I mean, compared to these objects.
Oh, I think
it
makes them pretty small. Uh-huh. But I don't know the exact numbers.
Yeah. But somehow I think that stability, so I think ultimately, like a topological stability for a finite structure, a small finite structure, the topological stability doesn't say too much. I think you really have to worry about energetic stability. I think the energetics of those bubbles is completely different from this Zinsky-Marie interaction stabilized object. Yeah. So I would guess as long as the Zinsky-Marie interaction is sufficiently strong, doesn't have to be so strong that it actually spontaneously is in the ground state makes skirmions, but as long as it's strong enough, then it will really want these isolated skirmions and will make them rather stable.
Any other
questions? Right. The spin orbit is strong, right? And that will give you a non-trivial topological structure in K-space.
Right.
So have you thought how this might interfere with the sort of real space dynamics that you're discussing?
Right, so this is kind of, it's not too obvious, it's not, let me put it this way, it's not clear this is not visible in what I've discussed in terms of my own results, because this is all phenomenological.
Right.
So if you wanted to, for example, if you would want to do a microscopic theory of these coefficients here, a microscopic semi-classical theory, you'd need to worry about that. Now these charging effects that I talked about precisely arise from the combination of real space, very curvature effects, combined with K-space very curvature effects. So I think there's a lot of very neat physics there. But this, the reason why, in first instance, we have not touched upon that is because you would need to rely on microscopic models to do anything. And for these PMA materials, which was kind of the focus of our work, I don't think there's a good consensus of kind of what your starting point should be. I mean, if you would do this all within Rajba,
yeah,
then you could completely go nuts, and then you would get nice results, but you're not, for these materials, not obvious if they have anything to do with reality. But I think that's definitely, you could also turn it the other way around. If you somehow, so these berry phase effects give rise to this discharging, maybe some other interesting effects which you can then use as a probe of the, let's say, the underlying physics, and maybe you understand a little bit better than what things are important in describing these materials microscopically. So I definitely think there is somehow a lot to be done there.
Okay, I think time's up, right? Cooking time. Thank you very much.